Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, August 17th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MISD Board to Evaluate Superintendent Riddick, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland ISD School Board will evaluate its superintendent at today's meeting. The agenda calls for the superintendent evaluation to take place after closed session, which happens near the end of the meeting. The evaluation will be the final item on the agenda. Riddick was hired in 2017. His salary was $275,000 when he came to the district, $10,000 more than the previous superintendent, Ryder Warren, made before he left the district to take the same position at Northwest ISD. At the same time, Riddick's salary was more than any other superintendent in this part of West Texas or the Panhandle, including Ector County, Lubbock, Amarillo, San Angelo, and Abilene ISDs, according to information from the Texas Education Agency. The Reporter Telegram sent an email to Midland ISD Communications Sunday asking if that salary has changed and how many years are currently left on Riddick's contract. During his tenure at Midland ISD, there has been a decrease and subsequent increase of failing campuses. The increase of Midland ISD staff teacher salaries, the increase of in-district charters and so-called choice schools, a failed bond campaign, the increase and subsequent decrease in teacher retirements and resignation, and most recently, the creation of the Midland ISD Online Academy. Riddick has led MISD's transformation associated with the System of Great Schools initiative. That included the district's falling short of board and teaching and learning goals set for the first few years, the creation of or turning over to third parties three campuses, Young Women's Leadership Academy, Sam Houston Collegiate Preparatory Academy, and Idea Travis Academy. In the cases of Sam Houston and Travis, the changes were to prevent the state from taking over campuses. During Riddick's tenure, Midland ISD has worked alongside the Texas Education Agency on matters, including the transition of the district to an earned autonomy theory of action, with the ultimate goal of having implemented a System of Great Schools theory of action by 2027. The System of Great Schools strategy, according to the district, involves putting autonomous schools at the center of the district's change efforts and focusing on meeting the individual needs of students. About teacher salaries, Riddick continued the increase and accelerated the rate of the increase of teacher pay started by Warren. This year, the Midland ISD Board approved starting pay of $56,500 for teachers. In 2010, just about the time Warren became the superintendent of Midland ISD, the average starting salary was $40,900. 6 years later, starting pay rose to $49,050. Riddick has told the board he wants the starting pay for a teacher to reach $60,000 and hourly pay for staff members to climb to a minimum of $15 an hour. Riddick also goes into the 2020-21 academic year having seen nearly total turnover in top leadership positions. Since arriving in Midland, Riddick has either created positions for or hired new employees for all eight positions at the top of the district's administrative professional pay plan. They include General Counsel, Chief Operations Officer, Chief Financial Officer, and Chief Academic Officer, pay grade 11. The four other positions are considered pay grade 10 and are Chief Communications Officer, Chief Human Resources Officer, Chief of Staff, and Chief Transformation Officer. He has also hired a new Chief of Police and Executive Director of Athletics, among other high-ranking positions. This article is entitled City, Three People Die in Structure Fire, by Mary Dearin. An adult and two children died Saturday after being involved in a structure fire in the 4300 block of West Dengar Avenue, according to a press release from a city spokesman. Midland firefighters responded at about 3:40 p.m. and quickly put out the fire that caused extensive damage in the kitchen and smoke damage to the rest of the residence. The adult and two children who lived at the home were transported to Midland Memorial Hospital, where they died, according to the release. Their names have not been released. Investigators determined that the fire originated from the kitchen stovetop and that the cause of fire was unattended cooking, according to the release. This article is entitled MISD, At Least 3,000 Students Sign Up for Online Academy, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD's online academy will start with at least 3,000 students, according to the district chief's academic officer. Lisa Goodnow told the Reporter Telegram last week that more than 10% of the district's student population has committed to starting the 2020-21 school year in the fully virtual learning option. The online academy is different than the entire student population learning at home for the first 4 weeks of the school year. Midland ISD announced its intention to start the academy after receiving feedback from the community. Those students who signed up for the academy made a commitment to learn at home regardless of the district's re-entry process. Midland ISD's school year begins Wednesday. The online academy will build upon the work that started last spring to provide a richer, more robust online learning experience for those families who choose this option, Superintendent Orlando Riddick said in a press release when the academy was announced. Goodnow told the Reporter Telegram that the online academy isn't the result of MISD farming out responsibility for online learning to another source to do a turnkey online school. She said the curriculum will be the same as students who want to participate in face-to-face learning. The district doesn't want learning gaps because they were in someone else's curricular scope and sequence and content. Those who participate in the online academy can opt to return to an on-campus instructional format at the end of six-week periods. We want our Midland students to be able to come back into a Midland ISD face-to-face classroom and not miss a beat, Goodnow said. She said online learning will be different than what students and parents experienced last spring. She also said this is a product of MISD staff and is not modeled on online programs from across the state or nation. What we relied on predominantly was guidance from the Texas Education Agency, Goodnow said. The TEA has a wealth of resources that we were able to jump in and pull on. We also used our own resources here at Midland ISD that we were able to pull into the virtual settings. But the notion of going 100% turnkey with a different model did not fit for what Midland ISD's needs are. Midland ISD surveyed parents this summer about virtual learning options. Of the 13,690 responses from families, more than 50.6% said they were interested in full-time virtual learning option. Q&A with Lisa Goodnow. Lisa Goodnow is Midland ISD's chief academic officer. Last week, she spent time talking education with the Reporter Telegram. Here are some of the questions and answers about the district's online academy. MRT, how many people do you have signed up for online academy? Goodnow, as of Thursday, when I last heard that data point, it was over 3,000. MRT, was there an online academy somewhere else that Midland ISD will use as a model for its online academy? Lisa Goodnow, one of the things that I'm really excited and proud about Midland ISD is that when we know we can do it better, we're not going to bring in another source to kind of do a turnkey online school. And there are a lot of reasons that we choose to align the Midland ISD Online Academy to the Midland ISD Comprehensive at Home, or when we get face-to-face, blended kind of curriculum. And one of the most important reasons about that, we know some families are starting off in that virtual environment for 6 weeks. And when they're comfortable bringing their students back into face-to-face learning, we don't want to have to navigate even more learning gaps because they were in someone else's curricular scope and sequence and content. We want our Midland ISD students to be able to come back into Midland ISD face-to-face classroom and not miss a beat. MRT, the online academy is strictly for just those who want that online experience, correct? Lisa Goodnow, it is. But we know that we've created different models that have virtual learning. we've got the Google Classroom platform up and running. It's a much different feel than it was last spring. Consistency across every classroom was important, so parents didn't have to learn three or four different ways to navigate that. So again, we thought it was important to have the same platform for students who are going to be either 100% virtual on Wednesday or a blended learning model when we go that schedule. So it's the same. It's the same platform and the same content. There's just going to be, you know, more of it if you're 100% virtual. MRT. So Midland ISD didn't necessarily look at a DeSoto model or a model that worked elsewhere and said, these are the general ideas that we're going to use for the online-only kids. Lisa Goodnow. No, we did. MRT. Who were some of those that you followed? Lisa Goodnow. There was one district that we looked at pretty deeply in Colorado. And then I looked at the DeSoto model, which I think they're still using a lot of their own curriculum. But what we relied on predominantly was guidance from TEA. TEA has a wealth of resources that we were able to jump in and pull on. We also used our own resources here at Midland ISD that we were able to pull into virtual settings. But the notion of going 100% turnkey with a different model did not fit for what Midland ISD's needs are. This article is entitled, Organizations Step Up to Help Accommodate Students Needing Place to Learn, by Stuart Doreen. Mark Palmer of the Abel Hanger Foundation and Veronica Dixon of FMH Foundation said there is help for Midland families as they prepare for a modified public school schedule. Midland ISD has announced it will start the school year with at-home learning for the first 4 weeks of the year because of the coronavirus pandemic. Palmer and Dixon told the Reporter Telegram in an email that there are several nonprofit organizations planning ways to accommodate as many children as possible in a manageable and safe environment. The Boys and Girls Club of Midland, the Midland YMCA, the Petroleum Museum, and Unlock Ministries are endeavoring to meet the technological demands of such an undertaking, as well as all of the logistical work to flex for greater numbers. Yet another example of the ways our nonprofit agencies serve this community, Palmer wrote. Although Right at School is not a nonprofit organization, it is also providing a viable offering for a very significant number of Midland students. For those of you who are concerned about the financial impact, know that there are scholarships and deeply discounted options available, Palmer wrote. Dixon added, these childcare providers have stepped up in a big way and are working incredibly hard to meet the needs of our community now and throughout the rest of the school year. Several of them have openly shared thoughts and ideas with each other to ensure the best outcomes for our families. They want to let working parents know that you are not alone and they are here to support you. This is the opinion page. This column is called Guest View. It is entitled, Politicizing Masks is the Wrong Way to Lead, by Kevin Pham, the Heritage Foundation. Every single American should be wearing a mask when they're outside for the next 3 months at a minimum, said former Vice President Joe Biden at a recent press briefing. Outside encompasses a lot, including places where a mask would have exactly zero effect. Normally, this kind of rhetoric is a merely simplified admonition to wear masks generally. But in this press briefing, Biden also endorsed a nationwide mask-wearing mandate, adding this gloomy justification. The estimates by the experts are it will save over 40,000 lives in the next 3 months. More on that estimate in a moment, but first, would such a mandate even be a good idea? In short, no. The primary purpose of the broad masking guidelines is to reduce the transmission of the virus among asymptomatic or pre-symptomatic persons who do not know they are infected but are already contagious. We ask everybody to wear a mask where close contact with others is unavoidable because there is virtually no way to tell if a person needs it. Having everyone wear a mask is the only way to cover every potential spreader. But we do not ask everyone to wear a mask all the time. A person who is contagious, and even symptomatically so, would pose zero risk to anyone else when standing alone in an empty field, or more realistically, in the parking lot between a car and the grocery store, or simply on the sidewalk. The recommendation to wear a mask comes from clinical experience and common sense. Surgeons wear masks during procedures, not to protect the surgeon, but to prevent the surgeon's respirations from contaminating the field. For the same reason, patients with COVID-19 or similar diseases are masked when being transported through a hospital. So what does the science say? There is tremendous research that shows that mask usage is associated with fewer infections. And this makes sense, because respiratory illnesses are transmitted on our respirations. Therefore, if we put a physical barrier in front of our respiratory orifices, it will decrease the speed and spread of our potentially infectious respiratory droplets or aerosols. But every single study shows that masks are not a panacea. They are a lightweight solution that comes at very little cost to the individual and serve as adjuncts to other safety precautions, such as hand washing, distancing, and minimizing unnecessary close contacts. Regarding that claim about saving 40,000 lives, Biden presumably is referring to this statistic analysis that models the effects of various mitigation policies. It estimates that between 17,000 to 55,000 lives would have been saved if employees nationwide were required to wear masks between April and May. The problem with Biden's claim then should be obvious. Requiring employees to be masked is not the same as requiring all Americans to be masked. And the situation in April and May is significantly different from the situation now. For one thing, masks are much more accepted now than they were before. And secondly, the infection has already spread through all or nearly all major cities in America, which means population immunity, although not yet at herd immunity levels, is going to be much greater than it was in April. Thus, universal masking now will not have the same impact as it may have had earlier. Now, masking is still helpful, and again, a prudent step to take when needed, but it is impossible to say that without a national mask mandate and its requisite enforcement, 40,000 Americans would be lost. Stating so amounts to reprehensible fear-mongering. There's one reason politicians shouldn't be trying to politicize mask wearing with mandates and calling for heavy-handed solutions they know are impossible, backed by outlandish claims they know are misleading. It compromises public trust and diverts us from doing the right thing. Americans, by and large, are generous, caring people. We need to trust them to care for themselves and their loved ones by wearing masks when social distancing is not possible. As President Donald Trump has said, it's the patriotic thing to do.
Veterans Event will be back in 21. The story was written by Sam Waller. Show of Support has joined the list of organizations to call off 2020 event because of the ongoing coronavirus pandemic. The organization announced that its annual banquet, scheduled for November 19th, at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena and Hunt, is being postponed with the intent of being combined with the 2021 event. Quote, "We just wanted to try to keep everybody safe, but it was a hard decision to make," Show of Support founder Terry Johnson said. Continuing the quote, "This would be our 17th year. I don't want to say we're canceling it. I like to say we're postponing it to next year and we'll do something bigger and better. I hate doing it. I hated making that call, but we will be back bigger and better. What really prompted me to make my decision was the day I learned that the oil show had canceled. It was time for me to do the responsible thing and postpone this to next year," end quote. Johnson started Show of Support in 2004 as a way to honor wounded veterans and demonstrate public support for military men and women by providing outdoor hunting adventures. Each November, the organization brings 20 military couples from across the United States to Midland to show appreciation for their service and sacrifices, according to the group's website, www.showofsupport.org. The program also seeks to bring public awareness to the outdoor sports of hunting and fishing, respect for resources, and the care and preservation of those assets. Quote, "We usually have about 1,200 to 1,400 people the night of our banquet," Johnson said. "We just felt like this year, with the way things are going, that it's not good to put people in a position where there's such close quarters. Another concern is we're bringing in 20 couples, an injured veteran and their spouse, from literally all corners of the country. We just didn't want to bring something in, didn't want to send something back if it were to happen," end quote. Johnson says he still wants to commemorate November 19th, the Thursday before Thanksgiving, in some way to honor this year's selected veterans. Quote, "We'll try to come up with something to do just in remembrance to kind of save the date," he said. "We always have this banquet the Thursday before Thanksgiving. We're just kind of looking to keep it in everybody's mind, looking for ideas that we can do that just causes everybody to stop and think for a minute and say a prayer for our injured veterans," end quote. Johnson said there are other events that will show support to, at least directly, honor wounded veterans. Quote, "Veterans Day is the week before our banquet, and it just worked out that way," he said. "I picked the Thursday before Thanksgiving because that's a sacred hunting weekend. It had nothing to do with waiting until Veterans Day was over. I hope Veterans Day will have more of a presence this year to try to keep everybody's thoughts toward show of support and injured veterans. We're hoping next March that CBT will be able to do their fishing tournament and be able to bring attention to these guys again. At that time, we bring in 6 of our alumni to be part of the fishing tournament, let everybody meet them and see them again and start building momentum for the next banquet," end quote. Johnson said the program is well enough established that it can withstand the loss of this year's events and be ready to resume in 2021. Quote, "As the founder, I hope never to lose the momentum that this community, the Permian Basin, everyone in Odessa, has built for this event," he said. "It's very hard for me to say, let's sit out a year, because it's Midland Odessa's event. But I think in the best interest of everybody's safety, we will back off this year. By no means are we not a viable operation. We're staying in touch. Most of our couples were already selected, and we visited with them. They know we're going to be here next year," end quote. In addition to the banquet and hunt, an associated fishing tournament was canceled earlier this year because of the pandemic. Quote, "There's a group of folks here in Midland that were at the banquet the first year we did the banquet," Johnson said. "They got together and committed to putting on a fishing tournament to help us raise funds. It's called CBT Charity. With the way things are going at Lake Amistad, the tournament was going to be in March, and that's when all this hit. Lake Amistad shut down fishing tournaments, so they rescheduled it. The crowd size that they've always had has been shut down. It didn't crumble, but some things just got in the way," end quote. Johnson said making the move early, more than 3 months before the banquet, helps avoid even bigger problems. Quote, "Right now was the time to do it," he said. "Either do it now or keep moving forward and maybe find ourselves in a worse position 2 weeks out. I didn't want it to be something like that. We got a lot of things in place to have our banquet this year, but we will hang on to those things for next year and be that much ahead. That's why I hope we can do bigger and better next year. We'll have done a lot of the work, and maybe we can add on to it," end quote. While events are postponed, Show of Support is still accepting donations to fund the program and provide wounded veterans with hunting gear, hunting adventures, travel, meals, accommodations, and material support. Quote, "We went through a train crash and survived and came back bigger and stronger," Johnson said. "We will go through coronavirus, we will survive, and we will come back bigger and stronger," end quote. Safety a priority during back to school. This is a guest column by Carol Cates, the chief nursing officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. "It just seems like yesterday when my husband's school, he's a teacher, let out for a spring break, and we were wondering if students would be coming back after the break because of the pandemic. Now here we are 6 months later, and in many ways still asking that question, when will we be getting back to normal with school? There are always many things to think about from a safety perspective with back to school, but this year adds on the challenge of the pandemic. I thought a good topic this week would be to talk about the American Academy of Pediatrics recommendations for a safe return to school. This year, for many kids, it's not just that school is going to be very different, it's that they are going to school for the first time or a new school. Change is hard for kids as well as adults. Let your kids know it's okay to be nervous, that many other kids are feeling the same way. Ask your kids what they are worried about and help them problem solve to overcome their concerns. Talk to your kids about the positive aspects of school, new friends, good experiences with other groups of children that they have had. Consider getting your child on or back on their school schedule several days before school starts as well. This year, more than in the past, kids are going to be dependent on backpacks. Many schools, for distancing and cleaning reasons, are not issuing lockers to students this year. As you are choosing a backpack, consider one with wide padded straps and a padded back. Backpacks should never weigh more than 10 to 20% of your child's weight, so consider what should go into the backpack and go through it weekly to keep clutter and weight to a minimum. Remind kids to always use both straps, as using just one can cause muscle strain. Traveling to and from school has its own safety issues. I have taken care of far too many kids who have had accidents involving travel back and forth to school. Those situations are generally true accidents, where the kid was in the wrong place at the wrong time, and are largely the result of someone not paying attention. That moment of inattention destroyed not just one life, but many. When kids are riding the bus, remind them to wait until the bus has stopped before approaching the bus, remind them to walk where the bus driver can see them, and make sure kids are looking both ways before crossing streets. If kids are transported to and from school in a private vehicle, make sure they have appropriate restraints, car seats, booster seats, and/or seat belts. When entering and exiting the vehicle, make sure they are not walking between cars and are watching as they cross streets. Remind teen drivers about distractions, particularly texting and driving, or when other people are in the car with them. If kids are walking or biking to school, remind them of the rules of the road for both pedestrians and cyclists. Have kids wear bright-colored clothing during the day, or white or light reflective clothing when it's dark, so they are more visible to drivers. The COVID-19 pandemic has added to the safety measures we need to teach our kids. Hand washing is always important, but more so now. Teach kids to wash their hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Singing the happy birthday song twice is a great way to ensure 20 seconds. If soap and water is unavailable, have kids use hand sanitizers. If you are using hand sanitizers at home or sending them to school with your kids, read the labels carefully and purchase from reputable sources. With a high demand for those products, there have been some toxic products released by unscrupulous people in the market. The CDC and the AAP both recommend face coverings as part of prevention for kids returning to school. Getting kids to wear masks properly and keep masks on can be a challenge. Experts recommend practicing at home with kids to build mask tolerance. They also recommend that we teach kids if they need a break from a mask, that's okay. They just need to do so in a place where they are away from other people. Having your child make the mask their own by choosing the mask or decorating it is also helpful in getting children to wear their masks. Social distancing is also going to be part of the return to school precautions, so know what those expectations are at your child's school and prepare your child accordingly. Finally, talk to your kids about safety at school, the normal safety, and the COVID safety. If they understand the whys and get their questions answered about safety, kids are much more likely to abide by safety practices and to be less anxious about their safety when they are going back and forth to school and are at school. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Drive-through food pantries. West Texas Food Bank and their partners conduct drive-through pantries to anyone needing food assistance. Tuesdays and Thursdays from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at West Texas Food Bank at 1601 West Cliff Drive in Midland. On Wednesdays and Fridays from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at West Texas Food Bank at 411 South Pagewood Avenue in Odessa. ID is required. Those in need may use the West Texas Food Bank drive-thru pantry once a month. You may be asked to work with one of the 80-plus partner agencies should you need food more than once a month. Pantry boxes are available while supplies last. Pantry hours are subject to change. The partner list is available at tinyurl.com/y6bu4ut2. Legal Literacy Livestream. The Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center has scheduled a legal literacy livestream with attorney Diane Leyva with Leyva Law Firm from 10 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on September 8th at www.facebook.com/PB Adult Literacy Center. Leyva will discuss general legal issues related to immigration and visas. Visit https://events.pbalc.org. Support group. Rays of Hope Children's Grief Center is a community outreach of Hospice of Midland. The center serves children and adolescents ages 4 to 18 years who have experienced a loss due to death, divorce, separation, incarceration, deployment, foster care, or other painful transitions. All services are provided free of charge. For more information, call 684-5437 or visit tinyurl.com/y6rl3xck.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, August 18th, 2020. Section A. Election news. All Midland ISD seats on ballot will be contested. two Midland College races will be contested by Stuart Doreen. There are four Midland ISD board seats on the November 3rd ballot, and all will be contested races. Katie Joyner and Joel Deal filed to run for the Central Midland seat currently held by John Kennedy, who will not seek a second term. Going into Monday, District 4 was the lone district with fewer than two candidates. Now there are three. They will face Steve Vargas in the election. Monday was the last day for a candidate to file to be placed on the ballot. There were 11 races on the ballot between the school district, Midland College, and Midland County Hospital District. Two other people filed for a seat Monday. R. Sean Rainey in the Midland College Place 7 race, and Scott Lynch in the Place 8 race. In addition to the race between three political newcomers in Central Midland, the school district races are current seat holder James Fuller in a race with Michael Booker and Matt Galindo in District 1, generally East Midland. That is the other MISD race with more than two candidates. Current seat holder Robert Marquez in a race with Rachel Davis. District 2 is generally Southeast Midland. Current seat holder Brian Murray in a race with Joseph Gallegos. District 7 is generally Northwest Midland. Because there are four seats on the ballot, this election could redefine the board, as four votes make up a majority on the seven-member board. The other contested races on the November 3rd ballot will be Midland College Places 7 and 8. In the Place 7 race, current seat holder Will Green will face Adrian Carrasco and Rainey. In the Place 8 race, Ralph Way will face Lynch. Green and Way have been on the Midland College Board for a combined total of 66 years. The contested races will be the first for a college representative in 10 years. Midland College's seats are at-large positions, so a person can run for any seat, and all eligible voters within the college district vote on each place. Scott Kidwell is running unopposed in Place 9. The only people running for the Midland County Hospital District Board are the incumbents inside Districts 1, 2, 5, and 6, Tracy Green, Dwayne Tomlin, Carrie Chaplin, and Tony Miramontes, respectively. Hospital officials said Monday they don't recall a contested race going back to at least 2003. Coronavirus news. City says Monday cases continued daily drop, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland Health Department reported Monday that the number of confirmed coronavirus cases dropped 28% week over week and by more than 55% compared to August 3rd. The 60 cases were the fewest since at least mid-June, according to Reporter-Telegram archives. The city reported that the cases are reflective of lab results from Saturday through Monday. That is an average of 20 cases over a three-day span. The case decrease continues a drop in the number of cases being reported inside Midland County. The city reported the number of cases last week was the lowest for any week going back a month. The overall case count rose to 2,948. That included 983 isolated cases, 1,365 recovered, an increase of 24 week over week, 395 under investigation, and 145 unable to locate or refused. There also have been 60 COVID-19 related deaths in Midland County, according to statistics from the Midland Health Department. Ashton Medical Lodge has cluster of cases. The city also reported Monday that 29 residents at Ashton Medical Lodge tested positive for COVID-19 between August 3rd and 15th. Once positive results came back, the residents were individually transferred to two sister facilities, Midland Medical Lodge and the Traymore in Dallas. Both facilities have the capacity for COVID-19 isolation wings, according to the press release. During the same time frame, 13 employees at Ashton tested positive. All of the employees are self-isolating at home. The City of Midland will continue to monitor the situation at both Ashton and Midland Medical Lodges in accordance with the CDC. Cornyn says GOP best prepared to rebuild economy after COVID-19 by Caitlin Randall. During a visit to Midland Monday, U.S. Senator John Cornyn addressed the tight races on the ballot in November, including his own against Democratic challenger M.J. Heger, and said the most important factor for voters will be which party is better able to rebuild the economy following the COVID-19 crisis. Cornyn visited the West Texas Food Bank Monday to discuss how funding from the CARES Act has been used by the nonprofit. Following a tour of the facility and press conference, he spoke to the Reporter Telegram in an interview about the November elections. When asked about polls showing President Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden neck and neck in Texas, Cornyn attributed the close race to anxiety over the coronavirus and subsequent economic downturn. The single most important thing that I think about, and perhaps I'm not alone, is who's best prepared to lead the country in rebuilding our economy after we've been through the recession. I don't think it's Mr. Biden, he said. Bush's selection of U.S. Senator Kamala Harris as a running mate is also significant. Particularly in the Permian Basin, Cornyn said, because of her stance against fracturing and public comments saying she would support a fracturing ban. He said a ban on fracturing would be a death knell for the oil and gas industry in Texas and chiefly in the Permian Basin. Texans understand what has given us the best economy in the world. Before this virus, we were the envy of the nation, Cornyn said. And now we're hurting. There's no question about it. We'll come back, but Texans understand it's not by embracing these anti-fossil fuel policies. Regarding his own Senate race, Cornyn said his team was prepared for a competitive election after Senator Ted Cruz narrowly beat Democrat Beto O'Rourke by 200,000 votes in 2018. Out-of-state funding for Heger by the Democratic Party has added an extra challenge to campaigning, Cornyn said, and so has a surge in registered voters in Texas. He said as many as 11.5 million voters are expected to vote in the November election, compared to 8.3 million in 2018 and 4.7 million in 2014, the last time Cornyn was up for re-election. In other words, I'm going to have to get more votes this time to win than my opponent, and I got combined in 2014, he said. A lot of folks have moved to the state, and so we've got to tell our story, and we're in the process of doing that. Cornyn wants to be able to act on next version of CARES by J.C. Lewis. U.S. Senator John Cornyn visited the West Texas Food Bank in Midland Monday for a tour and to pack senior boxes with volunteers from Park Hill, Smith, and Cooper. Cornyn had a press conference with WTFB Executive Director Libby Campbell, Midland Memorial Hospital President and CEO Russell Myers, and Spencer Robnett, at-large City Council member, about how the CARES Act, which was passed in March, has helped Midland. The area will receive $61 million in funding, some of which has already been dedicated. According to a press release from Cornyn's office, the City of Midland was allocated $7,953,000 to provide assistance to local food banks, offer rent relief, give grants to small businesses, and fund staffing and supplies for the city's response to COVID-19. West Texas Food Bank is to receive 139,000 pounds of food and 2,000 USDA Farmers to Families boxes weekly. Local healthcare facilities are to receive $24,682,049. Midland Health is to receive $17,046,188, which has been used for 6,448 COVID-19 tests, 147,320 N95 masks, 571,190 isolation masks, 184,080 isolation gowns, and 5,343,000 pairs of exam gloves. Midland International Airport has received $22,935,854. Midland Public Transportation has received $5,561,592. Cornyn said he hopes to be able to move on to the next version of the CARES Act, but is unsure because it is so close to the election and Congress showing the fraying around the edges of bipartisanship. Campbell said the food bank distributed 1.2 million pounds of food in July to the 19 counties the organization serves. The food bank had to change how food is distributed and turned to drive-through pantries. She said the pandemic has created a disaster that is different from any others the food bank has encountered. "This disaster is different," she said. "It's not a hurricane. There is no handbook on how to do this." Campbell thanked Cornyn for his work to help pass the USDA Farmers to Families. The WTFB has secured 2,000 boxes a week with 139,000 pounds of fresh food. Robnett said the focus of the city is health and public safety. He said that because of the CARES Act, the city council didn't have to make difficult decisions in relation to salaries of first responders. All the police officers and firefighters will receive pay progressions and raises in the next upcoming budget year, which is a big thing right now because there's a lot of controversy with police departments across the nation, he said. "We will use some of those funds to directly offset the 30% rise in sales tax revenue year over year because of the pandemic." Cornyn said he is hopeful that more monetary assistance can be given to people who are still out of work, including those in the oil and gas industry. The senator said the government was able to pass in March a one-time payment that gave families of four $3,400 and individuals received $1,200. "We hope to do that again if we can get off the dime and come together with Democrats and Republicans," he said. He said the first round of additional unemployment assistance missed the mark by giving some people more than they were making while working. Cornyn said Democrats and Republicans are negotiating the terms on additional unemployment assistance. City announces 6 COVID deaths. Total jumps to 60, by Stuart Doreen. The City of Midland Monday announced 6 more coronavirus-related deaths, bringing the total during the pandemic to 60. The deaths followed the 3 announced Thursday and the 5 total cases from all of last week. Reporter Telegram records show there have been 17 reported this month, an average of 1 a day, and 44 reported since the beginning of July. There also have been 41 COVID-19-related deaths reported since July 12th, an average of more than 1 a day. The virus is proving to be fatal for many of those with underlying conditions, as local health care officials said would be the case. All six deaths reported Monday were patients with underlying health conditions, according to the city. The patients were a man in his 80s being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital, who died Sunday. A man in his 40s being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital, who died Monday. A man in his 60s being treated in a Bexar County, San Antonio area hospital, who died Wednesday. A man in his 80s being treated at Midland Medical Lodge, who died Saturday. A woman in her 70s being treated at Midland Medical Lodge, who died Friday. A woman in her 80s being treated at Ashton Medical Lodge, who died August 11th. Cork and Pig open. Cork and Pig Tavern opened Monday at 200 Spring Park Drive in Ally Village. The restaurant, which had a soft opening Saturday night, will be open 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday. Brunch will be served 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, and happy hour is 3 to 6 p.m. daily. The chain is owned by a group of chefs, including Felipe Armenta of San Angelo, according to their website. For more information, go to corkandpig.com.
Hello, this is April, reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, August 18, 2020. Cork and Pig open. Cork and Pig Tavern opened Monday at 200 Spring Park Drive in Ally Village. The restaurant, which had a soft opening Saturday night, will be open 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Thursday, 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Friday and Saturday, and 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday. Brunch will be served 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, and happy hour is 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. daily. The chain is owned by a group of chefs, including Felipe Armenta of San Angelo, according to the website. For more information, go to corkandpig.com. Meetings. Midland College, 4 p.m. Virtual meeting. Go to the college website for more details. Gas prices. Midland-Odessa gas prices have fallen 3.5 cents per gallon in the past week, averaging $1.93 a gallon on Monday, according to Gas Buddy's daily survey of 156 stations. Gas prices in Midland-Odessa are 12.6 cents per gallon lower than a month ago and stand 60.3 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. The following are historical gasoline prices for August 17 in Midland-Odessa going back 10 years. 2019, $2.54 a gallon. 2018, $3.02 a gallon. 2017, $2.22 a gallon. 2016, $1.98 a gallon. 2015, $2.28 a gallon. 2014, $3.32 a gallon. 2013, $3.41 a gallon. 2012, $3.50 a gallon. 2011, $3.58 a gallon. 2010, $2.75 a gallon. Source, GasBuddy.com. Norman Elite is hosting camp. Norman Elite is hosting a virtual learning camp beginning Wednesday and continuing through September 15. The camp is 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. weekdays. The cost is $110 weekly. Register at normanelite.com. Clinics offer coronavirus tests. Midland Memorial Hospital, 68 nurse. MidlandHealth.org. Mobile testing center at West Campus for COVID-19 nasal swab PCR. Must call for appointment. Antibody testing at West Campus or Main Campus Direct Access. 68 Nurse or 221-1111. Cash price for antibody testing, $50. Signature Care, 699-2601. ER Care, cash24.com/Midland. Cash price for COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for antibody test, visit plus test, $175. Cash price for both COVID-19 nasal swab, PCR, and antibody, $300. If patients are insured, will need to pay copay. Rest will be billed to insurance. Copay waived for first responders. Westex Urgent Care, 3401 Green Briar Drive, 201-1403. WestexUrgentCare.com. Cash price for virtual visit for COVID-19, $75. Cash price for nasal swab PCR test, $70. Cash price for COVID-19 antibody test, $50. All COVID-19 testing must begin with a virtual visit. Stewart Medical Group COVID-19 testing. Swab tests by appointment only. Complete Care Midland, 1701 North Loop 250 West, Midland, 522-5033. Love notes being collected for seniors. National Senior Citizen Day is Friday, and to mark the occasion, Senior Life Midland wants to distribute love notes to the homebound seniors who are served by Meals on Wheels. About 600 notes are needed, said Tracy Renton, development director for the nonprofit. Anyone who would like to participate may drop off notes at Senior Life, 3301 Sinclair Avenue, before Friday. A box will be placed near the doors. For more information, call 689-6693. City updates watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the watering schedule from 2 days a week to 4 days a week. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The Utilities Department says residents should not overwater the lawn and should watch for puddles or runoff from sprinklers.
Obituaries and death notice for Tuesday, August 18th. Florentina Loera Garcia. Florentina Loera Garcia passed away August 13th in Hutto, surrounded by her family. She was born May 12th, 1930, in La Mula, Ojinaga, Chihuahua, Mexico, to Filomena and Jesus Loera. She has six siblings, three of whom are still living. Trine Hernandez, Catalina Loera, and Socorro Vargas, and three who have passed on, Delia Loera, Gregorio Loera, and Octavio Loera. She married Pedro Garcia in 1958. Surviving her are Isela and Mejia and husband Neto Mejia, Hector Garcia and wife Sonia, Maria Perez and husband Rupert, Alexandra Arellano and husband Jonathan, and extended family member Leo Arrieta. Eight grandchildren and four great-grandchildren. Rosary will be at 6 p.m. August 18th at Ellis Funeral Home. Funeral Mass will be at St. Stephen's Catholic Church at 10 a.m. Wednesday, August 19th. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Mickey Clark. Mickey Clark was born in Northwest Terry County on the L7 Ranch. His parents were Dewey and Annie Clark. His parents, four brothers and one sister, have all passed away. Mickey is survived by his wife, Velda Clark, two sons, Greg and wife, Beth, and Mark Clark, one granddaughter and one grandson, and four great-granddaughters and one great-grandson. A memorial service will be held Wednesday, August 19th at 10 a.m. at All Saints Anglican Church. Funeral services are entrusted to Andrews Corgill Funeral Home. Death notice. J.D. Robinson. J.D. Robinson, 82, of Midland, passed away August 15th. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, August 19th, at Nally Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Survivors include his wife, Gloria. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.